둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Good morning, Louisville. Listening to Drive Time Radio with Father John Misty.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK and WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here for checking out the episode and the series. Please do hit that subscribe button if you're not already. You'll get three new interviews sent to you every single week. That's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones. Of course, you can listen anywhere you get your podcast from, Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With, because we've had some fantastic guests dropping by here all the time. Recently talking with, let's see here, Sugar Ray Rayford. He's the Grammy-nominated blues artist, Kiana Simone, who stars in The Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat. Akon dropped by to discuss the 20th anniversary of his debut album, Trouble. We spoke with Michelle Andeggio-Cello, Jojo Garza of Los Lonely Boys, Edie Brickell. You know her from the new Bohemians, What I Am singer. The cast of Bad Monkey out now on Apple TV+. Rob Halford from Judas Priest. Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction. Jacob Bertram starring in Cobra Kai on Netflix. Just an example of what you can get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today is a special Rewind episode. We're going to collect four interviews with Father John Misty, Mr. Tillman. If you're nasty, all recorded between 2012 and 2016. The first, from 2012, catches Josh on his debut album under the new moniker of Father John Misty, having just come from a drumming stint with Fleet Foxes and revealing his new persona, as well as talking about drug trips and Hollywood. I will also say I was brand new in the interviewing game. We would both get better at it, and it didn't help so much that I literally woke him up. He was asleep, the phone rang, I woke him up, and he immediately had to do this interview. So keep that in mind for part one, which we'll jump into right now. It's Kyle Meredith with Father John Misty. Obviously, we should start, I guess, where the moment you said, this is enough, I'm not a sideman anymore, I'm going to do this all solo, because you did jump right out of... It kind of came as a surprise, I guess, to me. I didn't know that you'd obviously been making solo records, but to actually leave the Fleet Foxes and say, I'm solo for good now.
What was that moment? That decision was really, that was more symptomatic of like kind of a different choice. Like the bigger decision really was like, I'm going to do, it was more proactive than that really, mm-hmm. You know, like I'm going to do I'm going to devote the time that I have to play my own music and just be, you know, really being in a band like Fleet Foxes just
so then it sounds like it was a pretty easy decision for you at that point, just to say that this is it.
Yeah, it was a very natural. It was a very natural decision.
Did you ever feel like you were stifled then, as you were just as the drummer?
Yeah, I mean, not stifled within my role in the band, but I think maybe at some point I kind of had a mistake, like kind of overestimated how interested I was in doing that for like an extended period of time. But there's just more for me to do in this capacity.
You seem like you've got a mind that really stays pretty active most of the time, so I guess it's not surprising. And in fact, one of the most interesting things is, and I don't know if persona is the right word, but at one point you assume this persona of Father John Misty, with, I guess,
right,
with this great story of heading out and mushrooms on a novel and everything else, and suddenly, you know, it turns into, as that story goes, you know, what was that for you? And is it assuming in a persona when you know, now that you are Father John Misty and not just J. Tillman?
No, it's not really a persona. Hopefully it doesn't sound like a persona. That's kind of I think that's part of the kind of the fun of it for me, is that it has kind of a patently ridiculous name, but if you actually listen, you know, when you listen to the music, I think it's fairly obvious that that they're like explicitly about Josh Tillman, and it's not like a big put on or anything. Like, but it's just kind of fun to confuse people a little bit. And the album is definitely kind of about these issues of identity and myth and like self mythology. You know, like one's own personal myth, et cetera. And, I mean, the name was just like the last thing to happen. You know, I mean, the album was made, everything was like in the can. And then it was just kind of this last sort of, you know, logistical decision, like, what are you going to call it? And the name really just kind of came out of nowhere. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't like this big, like, I'm going to, like, become a superhero or some, you know, decision. Like, it was really just, like, what are you going to call this thing? And J. Tillman didn't quite seem to fit anymore, which is a funny realization that your own name, like, wasn't really appropriate for, like, the type of explicitly honest music that you're making.
Looking into the mirror and not seeing the reflection at that point.
Right. Something like that.
Yeah, but it does fit into kind of the mythology of rock star, and I'm talking about the very generic term there. But that doesn't happen anymore, and I guess that is what's fun as a fan and as a listener. To kind of see you go through and exercise this, you know, this grand tradition that really doesn't take place anymore with most artists. You know, we don't have the golden god stuff.
Yeah,
but yet you are exercising the mythology of the rock star, whether, you know, so it's not a persona, but there's still something, and it's the way you perform on stage as well. I mean, it is so interactive.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like a, in terms of like how often you see that anymore, I guess you see it a lot. You know, the persona thing, maybe, I guess you see it a lot kind of in like certain commercial music realms, like, you know, probably more, I guess you see it a lot with females these days. I guess you see a lot of, like, a lot of the pop music, like female pop music are just sort of this, like, these outrageously, like, overblown personas, mm-hmm. et cetera. I think kind of what's funny about my thing is that it's happening in sort of, like, these, like, sort of like slender means informing it, like it's almost like it just kind of looks like one person's imagination going wild, as opposed to one person, like, you know, an army of like aesthetic advisors
with
$1 million imaginations going wild, you know.
Let the lunatic run the asylum here, and this is what we get, Father John Misty.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just I mean, for people who've known me for a long time, it's behavior that's nothing new, you know, like, it's really just how interested I was in introducing those aspects of my personality into my creativity. And for a long time, for a really long time, there were just kind of these, like, I just didn't really know how to do that, and I don't think I really was interested in doing it because, you know, I know the risk that comes with, like, being funny or being entertaining, and that's that that people think that you are that person all the time and that you are accessible as that person. Mm-hmm. And that you are always, you know, funny, and they mistake humorousness for, like, just kind of happy-go-luckiness. And, you know, there's sort of a risk involved in putting, like, that much of your real self into your creativity. I was really guarded for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I think at this point, I am just kind of interested in, I'm not as precious about myself anymore. And I think I'm, you know, just kind of interested in, like, throwing a Hail Mary or something. And it's just, like, more exciting to actually be myself on stage. You know what I mean?
No, I do. And it's been really a thrill to kind of, I guess, watch you bloom as the little flower that you've become.
Yes, thank you.
Wiley from Dolls and I were talking just at Bonnaroo, and we were going on, and you kind of led to this, but your dance moves are something of an art form in themselves. And, in fact, what we decided was that you've given hope for tall, lanky guys to say that, yes,
totally, we
can dance. So
there's, like, the tall, lanky thing. I just think that I mean, you kind of are afforded the opportunity. As a tall, lanky male, you're kind of, like, afforded an opportunity to dance more like a cartoon character or something than any other body type. So, yeah, it's kind of fun.
I was self-conscious till now, but I owe it to you, sir. Thank you very much. Growing up in the 90s, we only crossed our arms, you know, and looked down at the ground, and you've shown me the world.
I know. It is. It's fun. It's actually really funny to me that, like, the most like eccentric, off the wall, novel thing that you can do is get up on stage and, like, actually entertain an audience. It's really crazy that we've come so full circle that, like, all I'm doing is getting up on, you know, like with that Letterman thing. Like, all I did was get up in a suit and sing my fucking ass off and, like, dance around and be engaging, like, but that's completely insane to some people, you know. It's really funny.
Well, so many bands, that they just stand there, you know, they go through the motions,
right,
and they're out. But no, it's great. I do want to hit back on this this whole, you know, the story about the novel. So you head out on, as you say, some good mushrooms, and you start writing a novel. Did that get finished? Is that out?
Yeah, it's in the it's in the album itself. Like, there's, like, two gigantic posters,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
in the album that have the novel on it. It's a footnote to the lyric, I'm writing a novel.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I want this great tome from you, I think. Now that we've got the taste of it, now that, you know, that idea is implanted right here, I'm looking for the great huge book, you know, your version of Gatsby, I think.
Yeah. It's sort of more my version of The Wasteland or something than The Great Gatsby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something
you could get in more to doing? Something lengthier?
Yeah, I would like to write. Yeah, this thing was, I think I vouch for the content. I think it's funny. It's really, to me, it was just so kind of part and parcel to the process of making the album, that, you know, I thought it was, like, somewhat appropriate to have it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And also just, like, really hilarious to have, like, an actual novel in your liner notes, you know.
Why not? Everything
it's
else
is pretty funny.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's really, like, it's like the last thing in the world people are expecting, so I don't know.
You seem to be getting to be a master of.
Yeah.
There's quite a bit of a...
I'm laughing more than any of you.
Joke's on us. There is some interesting lyrics in there, though. Do you have a distaste for Hollywood? Because you are surrounded by, you know, lots of folks. I mean, it looks like some of your friends are obviously, you know, actors and comedians and everything. But there's some lyrics that does come off like, you know, showing the mirror on themselves, and this is what you see.
Well, all entertainers are in some... Like, it takes some degree of contempt for yourself and for your audience, like, to be an entertainer. I mean, a lot of the time, entertainers are people. people who can't entertain themselves, like, and that may be like the, I mean, I'm just kind of riffing right now, but I mean, yeah, sure, I have contempt for like everything and everyone, but that doesn't to me, that's not mutually exclusive with like deep empathy, which you know, which on like a very real level reveals like the lack of differences between us, etc.
Right. Contempt for everything and everyone. I guess that also involves Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, it's all funny to me. It really is all just kind of a big. It's all a cosmic joke or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a like I'm up at 9:30 in the morning talking about myself right now. I have no idea how it's coming off. It's all just kind of hilarious.
It's coming across great, and I appreciate every minute of it. In fact, I'll let you get back at this point, but I have enjoyed the tweets lately. The Fox News stuff has been fantastic.
Nice. Yeah, that shit is just that. Those are like slow moving targets. You know, it's like really fun.
But to see you come off with as many as you do, I mean, that's it's fun to keep up with that. So
yeah, totally.
So please do keep going and keep making music and keep doing everything, because we're really enjoying it over here.
Oh, awesome! Thanks a lot, man.
I appreciate every moment you give me this morning, and hopefully we'll see you around these parts at some point.
Okay, it's like Louisville, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely be. I'll be down there sooner than later.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith, a special rewind episode with Father John Misty. Now we pick up in 2013 backstage at Bonnaroo, where Josh and I spoke about celebrity love and how he has his finger on the pulse of what a teenage girl wants. Part two of Kyle Meredith with Father John Misty.
Weekly feed, Kyle Meredith, Josh Tillman, Father John Misty. In the flesh once again. How are you doing, sir?
Great.
You looking fine?
Thank you.
Looking
I feel
well
strong.
Rested. It's a sunny day out here.
I feel
Monterey.
Strong!
Yeah? I can't fight with you. You're a lover, not a fighter. I've seen it.
Shut up. Fight me. Now.
I'm not gonna do it.
Shut up and fight me.
Not do it. Hey, man, I want to congratulate you on such a big year, on such an awesome year. You've been part of success before, but it seems like this has kind of blown up.
Right.
So that's actually a thought, success, and what is that? Because you've kind of seen it from both sides, but here
success?
You are. Success? Yeah, I mean, is this what you expected? Is this what you're looking for? Is this what's going on?
I mean, I don't know. Success is like, you know, amorphous. But it's like, you know, it's like being in a frozen tundra, right?
Yeah.
And you're out there for a really long time, and you're like frozen to the bone. And then you come upon like a giant burning pile of garbage, and you're like, oh my God, warmth, warmth. And you get the closer you get to it. But then like the minute you get like warm and you're like, oh, I love this, you start to notice the smell of burning garbage. And you're like, oh, fuck this.
It almost seems so.
I gotta get away from this burning garbage. It smells like shit. And then you go back out into the frozen tundra.
And you're cold again, so you need
yeah. And then you're like, well, I'm cold. And then you do that until you die.
Okay, so this is the cycle that you're stuck in.
That's life.
Wow. I could take this interview in some places, but I think that would be really, really dark places.
Well,
it doesn't seem like it's been a dark year. You've had a good year.
No. I think it's great. Yeah. I mean, I'm not being like, you know, just you have to have some levity,
sure.
Levity
sure,
about
sure,
success.
Sure, sure.
You can't. I mean, what kind of person would I be if I sat down here and I was like, yeah, pretty good.
Yeah,
feels great.
Love
I gotta
it.
Tell you, it's a really one-dimensional sensation, success. And now that I have it, I'll never lose it.
Sure.
So pain has been diminished in my life and. Yeah, well, I mean, it's you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, you gotta have some levity.
Well, on the other side of it, it does. So Fear Fun, big album, critically acclaimed, selling records out there. You find love, you fall in love.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily
No, one doesn't that lead to the other one. I'm just saying, this is getting back to, like, it's a nice right. time, yeah. you know, for Josh Jones. It's nice here, although I
sure,
always worry
I also
about
live
artists.
In the Western world, and yeah. I get to drink clean
sure,
water,
sure,
and
sure.
I don't have to fight in a, like, a civil war. my children didn't get abducted, you know, like, to become glue-huffing soldiers of fortune. You know,
you see this?
It's all
the
coming
garbage
up,
isn't
it's all
too bad.
Coming up
you know?
Roses for Josh Tillman. Yeah.
I worry about the love thing with some artists because that's usually when the creative spark goes away.
Yeah, that's because most people don't write, you know, don't in a real ass way.
Yeah,
I think you know. I mean, you know, that's actually one of the things that I think is interesting about writing about it is because the conventional wisdom is that is like what you're saying. And mm-hmm. when I actually think that there's a lot of angst in love. I mean, love. Makes you ask these questions that you don't otherwise really have to ask. Like, if you fall in love with someone, it's like, oh my God, you're gonna fucking die. You could die. And then where would I be? Like, I'm fucked, you know? If I'm alone, you know, and you have nothing to lose, I mean, that's just like a very different state of being. Like, I think that there are love songs, yeah, are typically really banal and super boring and, you know, ridden with cliche and, mm-hmm. and whatever. And I've gotten probably the best shit I've ever had to write about from kind of where I am right now. Nice. I'm proud of it.
Is this the stuff that's going to be working on for a new record?
Yeah, it's all done. I'm just going to bury it like in a hole in the ground.
Sure.
And then, you know, paint vomiting dogs for a year.
It's going to be a good series. I can't wait to do that interview.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you take the, you know, talk about what you take seriously and what you don't, you know, as far as success and all that. Do you take the job of, like, rock star seriously to a point? Because I can look at you, and that's such a corny term. It really is. It's cliche. But there's actually certain times I think you can use it. When I look at you, like, there's a bit of mystique there, like, you know, towards the old guys. And that's something. It's like, when you're doing that, does that come out naturally? Or do really great front men think about that a little bit? Like, you know what? I have to pull back a little bit. I have to be a little bit mysterious because this is a job and these people are looking at me and that's what I am.
Well, I mean, I'll say that I think, like, maybe, I don't know totally how to address this. Maybe in terms of, like, refining the definition of, like, mystique or something. I think that there is something about not caring or finding, because, you know, I find all this stuff, like, you know, kind of absurd. Like, sure. I have a hard time taking myself seriously doing it. And sure, like, a lot of what I'm doing is, like, some veiled, you know, in some way, I'm sure there's, like, it's some weird manifestation of some other, of self-loathing or something. I don't know. Like, I get up there and I kind of feel stupid, you know? Like, so I think that's the mystique that you're talking about is how sure. stupid I feel.
Sure. I don't know. I think there's somebody, I heard a quote the other day that said, every comedian wants to be a rock star and every rock star wants to be a comedian. And if that's thinking you're absurd and it comes out because, you know, you have the banter with the audience and everything like that.
You got to do that.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I won't address generalities directly. Mm-hmm. I think that quote is concise because it contains a wordplay sort of reversal sure. of the subject and the subject modifier. But I don't know how true that is or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just want, you know, my instincts. A lot of this thing is just about following my instincts,
sure,
like
sure.
ultimately,
yeah.
and my instincts may be maybe entertaining, you know?
Yeah,
I think that's really just what it is. Like, I'm doing my best to not really impede my instincts. And whatever it is I'm doing is kind of how it comes out.
Sure, it's working. Yeah, I mean, I heard you talk about that a lot in the beginning interviews when the album first came out, and you were talking about the big awakening that you had and everything. As far as following your instincts, you know, it seems to have worked. I wondered a little bit yeah. about if that was age, being able just to let go of
totally.
All the weight and all that stuff,
I think
you know.
I think, like, you know, certainly for me, age had something to do with it, and just I was really frustrated at 21,
I like, we all are.
You know, I was
Taylor Swift especially
so angry, you know, just like angry, and you know, I was kind of trying to address the trauma of the primal scene, mm-hmm. you know, for like 10 years or something. That was you know, that was the function of my music for a long time, was to, was a catharsis for, it was a reaction to this primal scene that was my youth. And once I kind of addressed that, and yeah, I did hit a point where I was ready to re-engage my pre-adolescent state or something and start painting and start like letting my, you know, or painting again, like doing visual art again. That was like a big one. Writing again, like and just kind of really getting to a pre-adult, to a childlike state where you're like, I can do things to do them. And there is no, I do this to be this, or I do this to have this, or can I do this if I'm not that great at doing this, or whatever. Just that shit, I think, for me, is just kind of, in some respect, gone out the window,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And it's, you know, it's just fun. Yeah.
Well, it did make for a great album. I mean, if you're fun, whatever happened, it connected with people. And I think that's the important thing, that it connected with people. And I have no doubt that you can do that with a love album. I mean, I really don't.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't want to call it a love album. I'm sorry. Once again, general.
No, I don't mind calling it a love album. It really is like, I mean, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why I just said that. Like, I'm, it sounds like it's like Die Hard or something.
No. Well, we'll all know when we hear it ourselves.
Yeah.
Which will be a while. Congratulations. It's been awesome kind of to watch the whole thing. Fear Fun out. You got a fragrance.
Yes.
You just want your women to smell a certain way?
Yeah, since by Misty. I just think that I get what...
I don't know that world.
I think I just have my finger on the pulse.
Yeah?
As far as the young girl zeitgeist. I also think it's like... it's just a product I really believe in.
All right. Cool, man. It's been a pleasure. I know you got other things to do, so we're going to meet
you. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Cool. Thanks.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith, part three now, with Mr. Josh Tillman. We jump to 2015, where backstage at Hangout Fest, we got to explore the album I Love You, Honey Bear. It's part three, Kyle Meredith with Father John Misty.
The Weekly Feed. I'm Kyle Meredith. So happy to have Josh Tillman back on. Father John Misty, as his mama calls him.
Yep.
I got that backwards.
As I call my mother.
As you call your mother, Father John
Father
Misty.
Father John Misty? I did. They were delicious. Thank you. I love you too. Never call here again.
That was a Seinfeld thing. His mom calls and just starts talking all at once, and finally about 10 minutes in, he goes, who is this? You can pull that one. I'm glad to have you back. I Love You, Honey Bear is a beautiful record. I know the last time we talked, back in Bonnaroo.
We actually started talking about it.
We did, because you said... at that point, you said, I'm going to go away for a while. Because at this point, I mean, God, that was a huge campaign you were on in that first record.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm going to go away for a while. I'm going to come back. I'm going to make a love album.
Yeah.
And that's what you said.
I was, like, just... just starting that whole process. I had a few of the... The thing was just starting to take shape.
But it's not really a love album. I mean, it is, but it's not a love album.
It's not about, like, capital L love.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't like a treatise or something. And I think that for most people, if it was like a kind of, it'd be a very poor advertisement for love.
I think most
people would kind of run for the hills if they thought that that's what they were in for.
This isn't a full page ad.
Yeah.
In a beauty magazine.
I mean, I really think of that album is like, an articulation of the unmasking process of like the most painful thing that any human can undertake with another person is to like
a relationship
unmask
and
intimacy, you know. And I think that's kind of why I was saying at the time, like, you know, that Because you were, if I remember correctly, you were saying the conventional wisdom is sort of that, like, an artist falls in love and becomes content
right.
and boring
right.
and whatever
and that's
else.
What I was hoping that wouldn't
and
happen.
I was in the middle of all this angst and whatever that was happening, just thinking, like, that in no way resembles, like, what I'm currently going through, you know?
But you've never been that type of songwriter, at least not, you know, with these last couple records. In fact, I have it written on my notes here, the word, you know, rope-a-dope is? The Muhammad Ali move,
oh,
where
yeah,
he kind of
yeah.
shows you one fist and then knocks
yeah, yeah.
you out with the other one?
Yeah.
That's how I always saw your songwriting, because,
yeah.
it, you know, and again, I feel like we're comparing apples to oranges when we talk about you versus
me
a
and
typical
boxing.
Artist.
Yeah.
No, Mitt Romney just had a boxing match last night.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Someone. But no, that's how I saw it, because you never went down that path. You know, it was never about saying, here's the pop song, here's the bridge after the second chorus. I mean, however it was, you were always kind of yeah. showing us this and then smacking us around that. It's,
yeah.
you know, the art of a twist in a song.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that, well, because the whole guiding principle of the thing, of my work became talking about personal truth.
Yeah.
And I think that personal truth always lies at the cross section of like a violent contradiction, you know? And I mean, like, with this album in particular, it's like, how can you talk about this self-doubt and misery and whatever and have that be like an articulation of what this transformative love means to you, you know? But to me, you know, and I mean, that even works its way into the way that I arrange songs or record songs. You know, like Smiling in a Stride Me or something, which is this very almost textbook kind of soul, yeah. like love song or something for the first three verses, but then by the time the back half rolls around, it starts to distort, you know, into
weird,
this
right,
like
yeah.
kind of grotesque thing.
And that's what I'm talking about. That's
yeah.
that's your rope-a-dope moment right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what makes you special.
But that, you know, a lot of these songs, that song in particular, the first few verses were written sort of in the throes of the initial like romance thing where it's all this like utopian thing.
That love bubble.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And
it's dangerous, but
it got, but once the unmasking started, which is like what Honey Bear is about, is that initial horror of
yeah.
like, oh my God, the dream is over. Like, here I am, you know? Once that started to happen, I realized that the way that I was thinking and living and hiding and whatever else made those first three verses farcical,
yeah.
you know? And it was just like, how can I put something at I need to put something, there needs to be, I need to leverage something against these sentiments like, there's no need to fear me, I would never try to change you, blah, blah, blah. I need to leverage something against that to make those actually real. And that's like, what's the most cathartic,
oh, nice.
Visceral, gnarly thing that I can reveal about myself? And that, you know, man-child, mama's boy.
Right.
But it works, you know?
Do you look at your songwriting, sorry to interrupt you, do you look at your songwriting, it almost sounds silly, that I'm asking it this way, as therapy, is it therapeutic for you? Because once you put it on the record, you'd have to do this.
Yeah.
You talk through all of these problems that you put out there.
Yeah, I felt like I needed therapy after this album.
Really?
Yeah.
You're getting it right here. We have a couch.
Yeah.
You can...
I mean, it's, this, I'm not sure what role therapy plays in the whole thing. You know, but
it's not, you just want to get to a place where you're good with yourself. Like most people's problems, if
yeah.
they've got problems, is they've not settled on themselves yet.
Yeah, yeah.
If they want to be this, or they're scared to be this in public, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I've never taken therapy. I can't speak.
Yeah.
But that's what always seemed to me is like you just need to be good with yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that there was like, I mean, you can hear it on the album, like a song like Holy Shit. That's something that I wrote that tune the day before Emma and I got married. And that really was like sort of an articulation of this realization of like all of this dissonance, and all of this intellectualizing of all this and this like telling myself as like a mantra, telling myself these reasons for which love is farcical or this like construct and why the world does not deserve it and whatever. It's like this is me waking up from this intellectual dream, you know, and saying like, yeah, it all looks great on paper, it all makes perfect sense, but it no longer describes my reality, you know? And having a reality instead of having just lexicon of intellectual concepts, like living inside, you know, just living inside your head, you know. I think that there was. I'm definitely not in the place that I was when I made that album, and that's a lot. That's kind of why I was calling it a concept album about a guy named Josh Tillman, because in order to perform those songs, I almost have to like inhabit this character that is like Josh Tillman from years 2011 to 2013.
Beck says he always feels like he's covering his own songs.
You know, yeah.
That's the whole thing, like kind of doing that.
Yeah.
One of the tracks, and it's been talked about, and I feel like I want to say it's been talked about for all the wrong reasons, is Born in the USA. That's when you come out, that's your introduction to it.
Yeah.
And all the conversation was about the laugh track, and it was about this, and I feel like there was opportunities missed upon some more of the obvious ideas of it. The lines, Born in the USA.
Yeah.
I don't know if that says a lot about, even beyond what you're feeling inside you, but the world we're living in. I mean, does this become a political song for you?
It's about passivity.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that politics are like, politics are an excuse. Like the failure of intimacy or romance is an excuse. Like the economic stuff in the song, the culture kind of failing on whatever birthright it's promised people.
Right.
I mean,
you talk about unmasking. That's using it in a different way.
Yeah.
It's really a good song about that, about how, to me, and this is my own interpretation, of course, but, you know, how we're going about our lives just trying to live inside the dream so we don't have to put up with what's really in front of us.
Yeah, and that's ideology.
Right.
And that's what the tune is addressing. And that's why it has such a corny lyric. I mean, you know, Bored in the USA is definitely like the worst lyric I've ever written.
I think Bruce would have said the same thing about Born in the USA.
It's a pun.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's a pun on a pun, you know.
Right.
But it's
how everyone took that song.
But in order to pierce this membrane of ideology and this slick talking, and because a lot of the song does, I think for a lot of people, lull them into a sense of disenfranchisement or indignance about like their I think that's where a lot of the laughter and the cheering comes from a lot of the time is like especially early on when I started playing it was
you say
this,
people
like,
did that
this
where
being
it was
like,
supposed
yeah,
to yeah
oh yeah, I, yeah. Which was truly unsettling but I think that chorus is meant to draw attention to the fact that it's like these are insipid complaints, you know, and the mandate to like create a soul and to create a sense of meaning in this life rests with the individual, you know, and it does, and it loosely ties in with the rest of the album because the whole album ultimately is about creating meaning for yourself, you know, and so much of the acknowledgement of like, you know, and like I went to the store like saying like, let's put an end to our endless progressive tendency to scorn provincial concept. Like there's all these acknowledgements of like, like love is just this like well-worn territory, like love songs is this well-worn territory. It's all these empty symbols and empty cliches and whatever. And it's like, yeah, it is all empty. Like you have to make it for yourself. Like you have to create your own meaning in these things, or it's not going to exist.
They give these little moments to people who grab onto and hold for life, and that's their nostalgic moments for those little empty love songs.
Right. I think that empty love songs are very effective.
You put up Buddy Holly's every day.
Effective fantasies.
Yeah.
You know, but. Yeah.
Do you find comedians have the problem that if they want to be taken seriously, it's a lot harder. You know, we're talking about people laughing at all the time. And because of what persona has come out of the Father John Misty era of your life,
right.
Is that a problem for you? That when you're trying to get these points across and this stuff is out there, nobody knows whether they're supposed to be laughing or not?
I mean, I get called pretentious. I mean, look at the comment thread below right now. I get called pretentious and whatever all the time, but I don't know.
I don't take it as pretentious. I mean, I really.
But I mean, when I try, when
you're a smart guy.
You know, it's like, well, I'm. Oh, thanks. I am like. I don't know. I'm just like I'm walking a tightrope, and I think that, you know, fuck you, YouTubers, whatever you think about this, like. Like what I'm doing is unprecedented. There's very little precedent for what I'm doing right now.
You're putting everything out there. It's
everything
balls.
Is entertainment right now, and that someone should actually have the gall to assert that like an artist is an artist because they are on to something that other people haven't picked up for themselves yet, and that they're dedicated to like mining themselves and their own experience and unmasking. In order to create some kind of emotional clarity for themselves and God forbid the culture, whatever, that's like very like very contrary to the zeitgeist. Yeah. You know, I said zeitgeist. So
well, now we've got Josh riled up again.
So I think it's like, but you know, I think it's like I'm doing like I'm following my instincts.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes the best way to answer a question is with like a joke or a piece of irony. You know, I mean, that's sublime irony to me, is answering a question with a better question. You know,
You're obviously not doing anything wrong, because you're growing in success every time. You're connecting with millions of people. You know, that hater's gonna hate, as Taylor likes to say.
But poor Taylor.
Just to wrap it in Taylor Swift references, Father John Misty. Either.
I have a new song that references Taylor Swift.
Do you?
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear it. And I should do that with the way our last interview ended. Do you know what you're going to do next? Is that next step?
Yeah.
I started wondering, and maybe even dreaming a little bit, because of your move to New Orleans, and with all of the things we think about New Orleans, like, oh, I wonder if he's going to have like the brass on it and everything, like that style.
I kind of thought that too. Like, I thought, well, I'm going to like vampirically move down to New Orleans and, you know, blood suck the culture. But it
like a voodoo album, you know.
It's, you always like. I ended up, but that has not happened. Yeah. I've really am writing in a different way than I have for like a long time. I think that one of the unexpected byproducts of this like intimacy thing and having this like through the eyes of, you know, Emma and me and this thing that we've, this like dialectic that we've committed ourselves to in terms of like unmasking whatever, this clarity has not, it's this clarity that I kind of have on myself. I'm kind of turning outward and writing about the world in a way. I mean, this next album is very just like.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we got a little bit of that. Like, I don't know if you're saying.
Born
like,
in the U.S.
And, yeah, Born in the U.S.A.
But Born in the U.S.A. Really. And Holy Shit, we're definitely like a transition into this like thing that I'm doing now.
I think that excites me more than anything I've heard so far. Because I would love to hear that. I want to see that part of the world. I'd love to hear that thought, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot about, you know, like there's this,
I can't, we'll all be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another couple years away, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean it's all it's all written.
3 months that we're on this record. I can't be rushing you.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
Anyway, Josh, it's awesome, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks you so much.
Yeah, of course.
I love you, Honey Bear, and sometimes I love you, Honey Bee. Are both available and out there. It's the Weekly Feed. Father John Misty.
Now, finally, we're gonna hop over to 2016. This has been the most recent interview that I've done with Josh. We would do interviews all the time, and then he stopped doing interviews. We've ran into each other a couple times backstage and had a lovely time, but just hasn't been doing press. But if this is the final interview that we ever do together, and I hope it's not, it was a big interview. I think this was my first time that I had an interview go viral because we talked about Taylor Swift and Ryan Adams in it. Josh dropped into the WFPK studio. We did this one live on the air in 2016. Aside from Taylor and Ryan, we also talked about success and originality and a whole lot more. My favorite interview I've ever done with him. Part 4 of Kyle Meredith with Father John Misty. Here on 91.9 WFPK Radio Louisville, I'm Kyle Meredith. And as promised for the past hour and 4 minutes, Josh Tillman.
Good morning, Louisville.
We're going
to
do it.
You're listening to Drive Time Radio with Father John Misty.
You could do this.
Yeah.
That's good.
Listen to that.
That's good.
My show is only half sold out, so I'm here at the radio station promoting it. I'll be here until we get to 2,000 tickets.
Let's be honest. Otherwise, you wouldn't have dealt with me today. You're just like,
I'd
nah.
never be here if it wasn't for management putting my hand to the flame and telling me I need to promote my new album.
Well, Don Pardo, I think we have a nice little rapport, but you
Don Pardo
crushed it all right there.
All right, I'm out.
Yeah, that's good. That was good. I count that. You know, now we all said we had the Father John Misty interview, and
yeah.
we tweeted out and tell everybody to go listen. So, mm-hmm. well done. Hey, welcome back to Louisville.
Thank you.
It's good to see you again. Father John Misty playing at the Palace Theater tonight. It's a big step up. Last time, I think you were still in the clubs, and now you've gone to the theaters.
Yeah. I think we basically just took like a club show and put it inside of a giant theater.
It's a pretty theater.
Yeah, it is. I think I just did it with Alabama Shakes.
Oh, were you here on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was a roadie.
I was obviously not there.
I was running lights.
You've got your plan B if things fall apart for yeah. you. You can always stand back.
Yeah.
You know what? It's funny that you say that because I've noticed a few artists, and we're talking like mid-level artists, they've done that in their time off. Instead of just like going home and sitting, I've seen them like running
it's
merch for other bands.
Tough in this economy.
Yeah. We got to keep going.
Yeah. In this t-shirt economy.
How are your t-shirt sales right now?
I think they're actually doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Considering.
Seriously, all joking aside, you seem to be doing very well right now. Like things seem to be going really well again. This new record... the reviews are great, as long as you're not reading comments on YouTube sections, as we've said before. But if you don't see that, it looks like you're doing really well.
Yeah, I feel strong. The shows are going really great. I have to say that I'm really, by and large, just surprised at the diversity of people and also just... I guess the continued sort of response to the record, mm-hmm. that it's meant something.
It's interesting you say the diversity of the people in the crowd.
Yeah, because I mean that I only bring that up because the album feels so specific to me, and it feels so kind of like rooted in these deeply. There's a counterintuitive law involved with music or you know whatever form of expression where it's like for some reason the more personal or singular the something is the more kind of universal appeal it has, which is you know nice for a some kind of faith in the brotherhood of man.
Right. I've thought that about a lot of things because you'll have a band who's like, oh, I need to write. You know, what's the word I'm looking
They're
for?
Like cloyingly accessible.
Yeah,
music.
They need to write very accessible so everybody can get it, but then it's just forgettable.
Yeah.
You know, and I like songs that use specific names. Like, I notice those things. You know, like, if they use specific names or if it's about an actual situation that, like, you're right, I would relate to that probably a lot more than the latest U2 song.
It's that way with a lot of things. I mean, it's if you aim straight for original, you just end up with, you know, like pretentious avant-garde, you know, just whatever. Or it's the same, or with authenticity or something. If you aim straight for authenticity, I mean, then you really end up with pretentious, you know, like, and a lot of people's, I mean, I guess a lot of people's idea of authenticity is so rooted in kind of like external signifiers, like, oh, he's from such and such a place, or he's dressed in such and such a way, or his music evokes the affectations of some period of time that we deem to be more authentic than the time in which we live, or whatever. But a lot of the time, originality or authenticity or whatever it is achieved by, it's a byproduct of looking for something that's beyond those kind of things, you know. I mean, Dylan's a great example of somebody who's like, I mean, on paper, you couldn't really find a more unoriginal artist. I mean, he was just lifting these blues tropes wholesale, you know. But there was something about him and something about the way that he did it that you can't, it isn't quite, it's hard to articulate, but it's just there. You just, the guy's an original.
Well, especially at a time when it wasn't like, you know, I could pull up Spotify and just, like, he was even like a messenger at that time. Yeah. I mean, it's one way to look back on that in history and go, dude was just ripping off people.
Yeah.
Really well done ripping off people. I mean, he's probably, you know, my top three favorite artists, but at the same time, it was a time when he was actually saying, I love this and I want to show you this, and so I'm going to use it, you know, in my filter.
Yeah, and I mean, that sort of rational interpretation of music doesn't serve anyone very well in terms of understanding what music is anyway. I mean, music is this thing that binds people through the centuries, you know. It's this commonality. I mean, it drives me crazy when people talk about cultural appropriation or whatever else in terms of music, because that music is, it's there for everyone, you know. Whether it's gospel music or Afropunk or, you know, whatever it is, you know, I mean, sure, things start in a certain place, but that music, but all music is meant to be handed off. And I mean, music operates the way that genes do or whatever, you know, I mean, they're self-replicating automatons.
I think I've said it a lot of times, but I find it really exciting to kind of be in this age, because the generation that's came up doesn't believe in genre. You know, when you're talking about, you can just take gospel and you can take Afropunk and all that, like, and I don't know what that's attributed to, just, you know, the swing of a new class, or if it's the shuffle button on an iPod in 2001,
which,
you know.
It's sort of ironic that's the case, too, because the medium through which people experience music now is all about datafication, and it's all about classification and understanding a listener through the, you know, whatever metric of genre, you know. So it's interesting that those things are those factors are working in concert with one another.
Thank goodness for live DJs.
Yeah. Where would we be without you, Kyle?
Without me. I'm talking with Father John Misty, Josh Tillman here on 91.9 WFBK, playing tonight at the Palace. And since we're talking about this, it is a good moment then to play something a bit odd.
Yeah.
Which I have given the controls over to you to pick the.
Yeah.
What is this?
This is just something that I think that I like Shazammed this. Speaking of, you know, music mediums.
That's all gone into their metrics too.
Although
I think a guy like you is probably only messing up their metrics.
I mean, I have a pretty ugly, like, iTunes. It makes very little sense. It's like pure geometric or geo mapping statistical anomaly. But this is, I don't know, I was probably in a Chipotle or something. I, like, Shazammed this.
I'm glad you did. Do you, Ann Lou is her name. Yeah. All right. Let's check this out. I'm not even going to try to say, I feel like I'd mess up the title of this.
It's called Free Bird.
Free Bird, the radio edit.
Yeah.
91.9 WFBK, we'll be talking more with Josh here in just a second. 91.9 WFBK, Radio Louisville. That is a pick from Mr. Josh Tillman, Father John Misty, and Lou here on 91.9 WFPK. And again, Father John Misty playing tonight at the Louisville Palace. I got to keep saying it to help his ticket sales continue.
So. They're dismal. Not nearly as dismal as Ann Lou's presence in the Louisville market now.
Now it's less.
There's someone sitting at a console somewhere in France, just like, I don't, boss, you got to get in here. I don't know if this is a mistake or what, but we are taking over the Louisville market.
We got that one good spin. They see
it on
their Nielsen charts, right?
We
got
to get her out there ASAP.
I was thinking earlier, again, you and I last saw each other in, I think it was May, whenever the Gulf Shores festival was, Hangout Fest. And so we kind of did our interview, and I thought, you know, what's happened since then? And I looked down a list. And you want to know what's happened since we've seen each other? There was a FIFA scandal. Cuba relations were restored for the first time in forever. We saw Pluto up close and found water on Mars. A big refugee migration happening in Europe. Volkswagen recall. I think that's important.
Yeah.
Donald Trump and Kim Davis.
Yeah.
That's what's happened since you and I last saw each other.
It's amazing the butterfly effect that our conversation had.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
If we
when you and I get together, the world goes to shit.
Yeah.
Sorry. You have a 7-second delay.
It's delaying everywhere else in the world right now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what's happened since we last. So I guess that's a bit of a PSA to our audience. You know, maybe to get under the desk.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what's next?
But you've had a lot going on in your own world. I know there's a new music video I did want to bring up the night Josh Tillman came to our apartment, got its own video, and it's a really cool video.
Thank you.
Where you find yourself, you meet yourself in a bar.
Yeah.
You take yourself home.
Yeah.
Get a little close with yourself, and then you take the walk of shame the next morning.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you're asking me what the...
I don't think there's a question, but I would love you to talk. You know,
That's what happened.
I will tell you, I think if Freud were still alive, he would just be jumping up and down like, yes!
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of psychoanalysis and Freud and Lacan and Zizek kind of Slavoj Zizek kind of is sort of my gateway to understanding those guys as much as I can. I mean, I can't, you know, I mean, even like with Jung, I mean, like most of his books are totally like impenetrable to me, but there was a Freud, that video and the song too was kind of partially inspired by this Freud quote that was, it's precisely the superficial differences between people that are otherwise alike that inform the hostility between them. And I think some of the misconception around that song is, and sure, the song is, I do like, to be honest, that I do like to provoke, you know, in some ways, but that there really is, that the point of that song, aside from it, that it is just messy and ugly, and I felt like in order to write about myself and my experience with intimacy and whatever, I had to include the messy aspects of it, and I had to include the ugliness, you know, in order for it to be real. But that the point of that song is like, maybe on first listen, you just hear this laundry list of petty grievances against this girl, but that ultimately it's me that's the asshole, you know, in the song. Like, and the video, you know, because I mean, who does that? You know, like, you know, it's like there are all these self-righteous, all this self-righteousness and all this like justification of like why I'm better than this person, but then I'm still there and I'm still in this person's bed, you know? And like, what is it that I'm looking for from this person if I really feel that I'm like so much better than them? Why don't I just leave? And And, you know, the chorus that, like, oh, my God, this never happens, like, that, you know, I mean, that's about, like, you know, this, like, impotence, you know, this, like, male powerlessness, you know. And that's what happens with powerlessness, is you lash out, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the video, I think, and this is part of why I like videos, is being able to, like, contextualize or to give subtext, like, to explore the subtext of a song. And that, for me, it was like, these two people are not all that different. You're just hearing my side of the story, you know. If you were to hear her take on the story,
what would she say about
you? It would
you?
Sound a lot different, but it would also probably, you know, be the same. You right. know, like, it's just like, this guy is an asshole, you know, and she would be right, you know. So I'm kind of playing chicken with the listener a little bit. And I've been accused, I guess, of justifying, maybe rightly so, justifying the misogyny in the song with, like, a bunch of, you know, hot air, yeah, so to speak. But
it's catchy. You said a lot of eloquent catchy, stuff, and I'm only adding, and it's catchy.
It's a catchy, yeah. I mean, I like misdirection and I would almost go as far as to say, if you listen to the way that the lyric is even being delivered as a singer, that it is not this, like, joyful, I'm not, like, indulging in, like, how great it is, you know, like, it's this soulless song, you know, and it needed to have this antiseptic, clinical, kind of chimey, soulless sound, you know, in order to convey just how kind of, like, empty and shallow the whole song is and the sentiments in it. So anyway, the video is like this, you know, just this way of, like, exploring the narcissism in it, you know, where it's like, I mean, narcissism is, like, I think, largely misunderstood as being, like, synonymous with egotism or mm-hmm. or self-love or something. And there is definitely egotism. There's a component of egotism in narcissism, but a narcissist is someone who's, like, who has a total lack of self-awareness, and they look for their identity in externalities, you know, in their phone or in other people mm-hmm. or whatever. And that's why they're constantly seeking out their own image out in the external world, because they have no concept of what it is. They have no functional concept of who they are. And I think that I was really wrapped up in that for a few years, where I had no working concept or no working, no functional self-worth. So I was looking for it, and it's like, if I can get laid tonight, then that means that I'm, like, an attractive person that people like.
Especially at a time when people are just throwing all of this praise at you suddenly.
Yeah, that's the real danger.
Yeah,
of that stuff is that it, you know, it works, and you're getting a steady stream of some kind of, like, concept of who you are. You know, but that's why people need to wean themselves off at some point in your life. If you want to get to some state of higher consciousness or something, which is what we're here for. I mean, that's the most fundamental dynamic of human life, is to move from a state of lower consciousness to higher consciousness. You have to wean yourself off, like, the social media and all that stuff, because it makes you spiritually diabetic. You know, to where you need this IV drip of affirmation, yeah, of, like, who you are, some kind of reminder of who you are and what you're about. You have to cultivate some kind of your own understanding of who you are, and you have to be able to go back to that and trust that it's real. But so that video, I'm glad it's behind me. I will probably never play it again after this tour, because it just is gross.
Well, It would actually be good radio if I went into that right now, but that's not what we're going to do. Right. Now that we've just talked about that for 10 minutes, let's instead play a song by the Bee Gees.
I'm sure everyone's heard it.
No, in fact, you did.
Buy tickets to my show. If you're interested in more rambling monologues like this, you'll love my concert tonight.
You did pick out a Bee Gees song. Why did you pick out I Lay Down and Die? Because it sounds like a Josh Tillman title. That's why.
It sounds more like a Jay Tillman.
Jay Tillman, that's it.
I think I have like an album. There's a Jay Tillman album called Lay Down. I just am like loving this album. And I just love the fact. I mean, this is like mid-70s or something. And the Bee Gees, I think Robin had just left the group at this point and to make Robin Raines. Mm-hmm. And these guys are just on their own planet, you know?
I even heard one of their Saturday Night Live hit, or Saturday Night Fever hits earlier today. And it's funny that you bring this up because that's what I was thinking. It's like, my God, these guys were so good. And it's easy to think about them in a time where it's like, ah, corny Bee Gees.
Right, well.
But they were so good.
Yeah, well. The Saturday Night Fever thing was just such an obviously such a, I mean, it's hard to imagine a world wherein that song doesn't exist, you know, but they were Beatles level as far as like the sophistication of their music compositionally and whatever, and the depth of like creativity and experimentation and whatever in their whole catalog. I mean, yeah, this soundtrack is just, it's like all I've been listening to.
Well, let's play it right now. Cucumber Castle is the album. So I Lay Down and Die from the Bee Gees, Father John Misty here on 91.9 WFPK. It's the Bee Gees here on 91.9 WFPK. Another pick from Josh Tillman. Father John Misty, who's playing tonight at the Louisville Palace. The details on that over at WFPK.org. He's going to play a song for us in just a moment, and we got one more guest DJ pick, I guess, to get here in a few seconds. But there was a song you put out into the world recently, The Memo, which is a great song, and like a few other things you put out into the world, it was kind of also gone.
Yeah.
Very quickly. But it's an interesting song because I know, I guess when I look at it, and I haven't read your meaning of it, but you read the lyrics and you go, as a person in the media, you kind of hear that and you go, okay, because I know that you've got this tricky, tricky relationship, especially with digital media, I guess. And is that what The Memo is sort of poking at a little bit?
That song, I mean, the title, The Memo, is sort of like, I imagine it being like this memo that is going around essentially like this fictitious, symbolic halls of power of some imaginary entertainment conglomerate.
Kind of like Republican talking points.
Basically saying that look like people, I mean, it's hard, you know, without having had people hear the song per se, but I think people are quick to dismiss the significance of the ways in which we entertain ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think that the ways in which we choose to entertain ourselves have an impact on our capacity for, I guess what I was talking about earlier, like consciousness. Mm-hmm. And that it isn't strictly innocuous, you know, that it can actually have like a corrosive effect, you know. And I think the best line in the song is leading, there's lyrics leading up to you, but this, that you'll allow them to tell you that you're the eater and not the eaten, but that your hunger will only cease if you come binge on radiant blandness at the disposable feast. And that's, you can spend a life that way, you know.
And these are the same people that you say in the song that while they secretly hate you, they're also telling you that you're the
I mean, it's about narcissism too, you know. I mean, this epidemic, you know, like that you're, you let them tell you that you're a glorious, and then I'd say a curse word for scat that the entire world revolves around.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, as the world is getting smaller, small things take up all your time. You know, I'm just trying to like, just this, it's easy to dismiss this stuff. It's hard to talk about this stuff without being so easily dismissible as being either paranoid or like a conspiracy theorist or something.
Yeah, but when you know, it shouldn't be that hard to see coming from you, because like I said, when we step back, I see, and maybe I can't say we because it's just me, I see that you do have this interesting, tricky relationship with the media.
Yeah.
That you've got, you know, critical acclaim and you've got, you know, great fan base, and at the same time, you're always having to defend yourself while having some fun.
Yeah, I mean, that song, it was kind of misinterpreted as having been written in direct response to this Ryan Adams, Taylor Swift thing, which was very much just like from conception to it being like a global news item was like an hour.
Yeah.
An hour from like, ha ha, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a cover, you know, like walking by my tour manager's office and she was listening to the record and I was like, oh, is this the cover of the thing? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I'm going to do a cover of the cover of his cover in the style of
Velvet
the Smiths,
yeah,
in the style of the Velvet Underground. Yeah. You know.
Which the turnaround, then, by the way, was so impressive that yeah, I honestly didn't believe it at first. Like, you must have had this just laying around.
It was, I mean, I hadn't even really heard the original material.
Yeah.
So I was like, just print out the lyrics and I'm just going to. So I hadn't really, I mean, I'm sure I'd heard them in like I'm sure I'd been like walking by a Cinnabon or something, yeah, at the airport and heard it. But I didn't know, like, I mean, obviously the structurally, my versions have nothing, musically, mm-hmm, nothing to do with the originals, which anyone could tell.
Listen, I do want to say they were really good, by the way.
I think that they have merit.
I was sad when they also left. You know, I was like, all right.
But, you know, I put them up assuming that I'm just so naive, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, well, no, I'm not. On some level, I knew that it would resonate.
Poking the bear?
On some level, yeah. But on another level, not to the extent that it did. Yeah. So by the time I got back to the bus that night, my TM was like, it's like the top trend on Facebook. It's like, it's on USA Today. And I was like, this is ridiculous. So I went and took them down, thinking like, okay, now well, that's over.
I guess that shouldn't be surprising because so, Taylor being, you know, the biggest pop star in the world right now, Ryan Adams, who Ryan Adams is, and you,
sure,
are, you are, like, sure, it's just right, prime right, for people, for yeah, headlines, clickbait right, headlines, yeah, and the like.
So I took them down thinking like, well, you know, yeah, like, that's that.
Yeah, right.
And then woke up to this deluge of emails that were like, everyone wants a statement as to why they're gone. Which I thought, like, this, you like have to be kidding me. And an email to the Sub Pop publicist or something, mm-hmm, from Taylor Swift, that's like, why did he take them down? You know? And basically, I don't know. It's just this, it really, it was this real, this crazy kind of articulation for me, the difference between like traditional power and postmodern power, yeah, where like traditional power would be like, take those covers down. Like, those aren't your songs, whatever.
Right.
But postmodern power is like, you have to keep those up. You have to keep those.
Because it's helping out her career.
You have to keep them up because there's, because that's not her narrative. That's not her image, you know? And what I realized was that people assumed that there was this traditional power thing at play, which was like that, you know, like, I'm sure she didn't even hear the tunes. I mean, whatever, you know. Yeah. But there was this narrative out there that was like that, you know, the big bad major label artist came after, you know, the indie guy and told him to take whatever down. That said, I wasn't going to play ball with these people who wanted me to come out and say, I wouldn't, you know, so-and-so didn't this, I just, what, you know, whatever, just getting everybody off the hook. And I was annoyed at them. I was annoyed at the media that you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, these people will print anything. So I went and gave them the most fraudulent, like the most blatantly absurd, unprintable piece of surrealistic nonsense.
And they printed it.
And they printed it.
They printed it. This is Lou Reed coming to you in a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just obviously nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, but they need it to be a story so badly,
right?
Because it took off, and they have these, I mean, these stories, I hate to break it to everyone, but they don't get printed in order of actual significance or importance, mm-hmm. or cultural edification. It's purely cynical. It's the most cynical thing in the world. And the irony is that I get called a cynic for putting out something like that, when the whole system is predicated entirely on the cynicism of, like, these idiots will read anything. They'll believe anything, you know? And I mean, that's just what really, that's what bothered me about the whole thing, is that all these, like, these ridiculous off-brand think pieces that got written about it were talking about my like, near-toxic cynicism, you know, where what I did was, that was just, I mean, sorry, that was just like pure creativity, you know? And pure creativity looks really bizarre out there in the world,
right.
You know? Like a piece of just creative writing as a news story, you know? It's just, there's nowhere to put that. There's no way to understand it. And people just projected their own need for some kind of cultural warrior moment, like, on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this undercurrent of aggression and frustration about the fact that we all just consume this garbage all day long, and nowhere to focus that frustration on. So they just chose me.
How was that?
Where I just did, to me, it was just like a way to fill an hour in a day, you know. But how it spun out of control, that wasn't me, man. I mean,
yeah.
Sorry.
You just put...
I know that would be a lot easier for people, but it's like, you make the world that you live in, you know?
Well, I hope this doesn't scare you away from doing these things in the future, because that was fun, and you've done little things here and there, but I like those things, you know? But I don't have to deal with them like you do.
No, I mean, I didn't enjoy having, like, the eye of Sauron, like, turned on me in that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't like people putting words in my mouth in terms of, like, what the holy crusade that it was, like, turned into was all about. But yeah, I mean, it is something that I'm not sure that I... Do we have time to just go, like, a little more?
Sure, go for it.
The thing about irony that I'm, like, struggling with at this point, in terms of irony, in terms of, like, these sort of escapades, is that, sure, on some level, it can serve as, when irony is sublime, it can serve as, like, a wake-up call, you know? And you can Trojan horse something into the consciousness. But more often than not, it is anesthetizing, and it gives people permission. It's a way of giving people permission to keep living the way they're living by, like, making a joke out of it. And by saying, like, well, haha, aren't we all so self-aware? And, like, since I am making fun of this kind of thing, I'm allowed to keep doing it, you know? And that's not the function that I want to serve, like, in my life or in the culture or whatever infinitesimal impact I have on the culture or whatever else. It's just this you see it in advertising all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it's like, since we know that commercials just have to exist, that they're just an inevitability of human life. They may as well be funny. They may as well be entertaining. And since we know that we're a commercial and you know that we're a commercial, then we can just go ahead and make fun of the fact that we're a commercial, but you can still get the commercials have to get just by virtue of being a human on planet Earth. And that kind of thing, it's like, yeah, it makes you feel above it all for a split second, but it's at that split second that you're a part of the whole thing. That you're a sucker.
Yeah. Spoon, you know? Bowl, nom nom nom
yeah.
nom.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. We can edit this down, right? It's live. So that's
Father John Misty here on 91.9 WFPK. He's actually going to play a song live for us next. And he's playing at the Palace tonight. And he chose a song from Charlotte Gainsbourg from the IRM record. And that's what we're going to play right now. And then we'll turn it over to you with a guitar. Okay?
Yeah.
You feel all right?
Feel great.
You need a hug?
No.
All right. It's 91.9 WFPK. Father John Misty is playing tonight at the Louisville Palace. And he's also just given me my longest live on-air interview. So thanks for that, Josh.
And another thing.
This has been really fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
We love the new record. You got a live song for us right now.
Yeah.
And there you go. A special rewind episode. You made it to the end. All four episodes. All four interviews, rather, with Mr. Josh Tillman. Thanks to Josh, as always, for the time he's given. Thanks to you for checking out the interview. Please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I do. 3 brand new ones every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts from. That's Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows features some classics and favorites from Marcia Griffiths, Lucinda Williams, The Beatles, Logic 1000 and Vagabonds, Sunny Day Real Estate, Tears for Fears, Crowded House, Alanis Morissette, Belly, St. Vincent, Jenny Lewis, Kings of Leon, Franz Ferdinand, Billy Idol, Jane's Addiction, Lady Blackbird, and my interview with comedian Reggie Watts to talk about his special Nevermind and his autobiography. Just an example of what you can hear when you tune in starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition of Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.